Garner's record transfer fee, the kiss of death to the Jersey Bulls, and a bad weekend for multi-club ownership models. All that and more on today's show. Hello and welcome to the Betting Expert Football Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Jenkins, joined as ever by Betting Experts Football Editor, Mr. Sam Ingram. How are you doing, Sam?
Hello, Dan. Yeah, good, thanks, mate. It's playoff season, isn't it? So I'm like a pig in muck at the minute.
Midweek football, midweek Champions League. It's got the sun is shining.
Enjoying myself. How are you doing? You all right?
I'm great, man. It's like the end. I love this bit of the season because I get to remember all of the outright bets that I've made and forgotten about in the last couple of months, which I think next week we can have a little deep dive into some of these outright bets that I've got, because there's a few. Okay. There's a few. I'm not saying they're good or bad, but yeah, there's a few.
Yeah, nice. Nah, it's a nice time of year, especially when you've done some decent work in the anti-post markets and stuff. And obviously we've got Euros coming up as well, so we can start to look forward to that maybe. I know we're looking at getting some content up on site this week for the Euros, which is exciting.
And a lot more to come. Just finishing off the final touches for a big project that we're going to be releasing in the next couple of weeks, which, yeah, we'll get to and probably devote about 5 episodes of talk to just promoting the hell out of it.
Not allowed to speak about that just now. We'll give it a week or so. Sure.
Yeah, it's teasing. It's like, it's marketing, man. Come on, marketing 101. We've got to tease it.
Yeah, fair one.
What have you got for us this week?
So, yeah, last week I spoke about the Jersey Bulls and I was really invested in their season and I was looking forward to the weekend because they had their big playoff game. And yeah, I've put the kiss of death on them, really. I think they lost 2-1 on the weekend against Croydon. We mentioned, didn't we? It was Stormzy's and Wilfred Zaha's AFC Croydon team. They scored the winner with about 20 minutes to go, and Jersey Bulls then released a statement on Monday, so yesterday, recording on Tuesday here, which read, "Jersey Bulls Football Club are sad to announce that manager Gary Freeman and his management team have resigned from their posts at the club with immediate effect following the club's most successful season to date." So if I mention anything about your football team in this show or future shows, then yeah, just beware.
Stay tuned for Sam's bets of the week to come in the second half of the show if you really want to see who's going to lose this week. But yeah, I mean, not good. But I saw Stormzy released, was it like a kind of headquarters in at for Croydon, wasn't it? Murky FC HQ, it's called.
I saw that. Yeah, it looked pretty impressive. Saw a little video of like a tour on the grounds.
Yeah, not all bad news for them. So one for me this week, a bit of a deep dive. So the City Football Group, which we're all familiar with, the multi-club model that own Manchester City, they own Girona, they own a club in France, in Australia, all around the world, New York as well. They've had a bad week, Sam. They've had a really bad week. They own a club in France called Troyes. They had a game abandoned on Friday night with fans protesting because of perceived bad performance in the league. They held out a big sign that just said, "Thank you, City." And yeah, they got a bit feisty. They were throwing flares onto the pitch and the players were throwing them back at the fans. It was all kicking off. The game got abandoned in the end. Now, one of their gripes, and it's one of many, is the deal for Savio. You know, Savio is tearing it up for Girona at the moment.
Yeah.
He was Troy's record signing back in 2022 and is still yet to play a match for them. So currently at Girona, as I said, his manager at Girona, Michel, said this week that he's the best player I've ever had. And he's actually going to be joining Manchester City in the summer in a deal that the Premier League has requested that City provide proof of fair market value of the deal from an affiliate club, because there's some kind of suspicion there that the price has been shrunk slightly.
Okay. You know, the final
fee. I know, who can believe it? Meanwhile, at the weekend, Girona beat Barcelona to secure a top four place and Champions League qualification for the first time in the club's history. Now they're apparently waiting for confirmation from UEFA about whether or not they'll even be able to play in the Champions League next season, as City, an affiliated club, have already qualified for the competition. And according to UEFA's rules, only two affiliated clubs qualify for the same competition, the one that finishes higher in their domestic league will take the spot. Of course, if Manchester City finish second, then, which is quite, you know, it's not out of the realms of possibility, with still a few games to play. Manchester City finish second, Girona finish second, then it'll go down to coefficients. But if Girona finish second and Man City finish third, they may not be able to play in the Champions League next season.
I would love to see that. It's not going to happen, is it?
But it's not going to happen, but it'd be hilarious.
But yeah,
it's hilarious.
It's outrageous. So City are on the verge of signing Savio. Meanwhile, Troyes are in the relegation spots in League Two.
League Two. Yeah, they're not even in Ligue 1.
In France. Or Ligue 2.
Ligue
2. Yeah. Ligue 2. So yeah, I mean, no, same. Imagine supporting Troyes and you know, one of your players is on loan at Girona, about to go to City, and he's never played for the club.
Shocking.
And you're languishing in that league. Like, you'd be absolutely fuming. I'm not surprised they're protesting and coming onto the pitch, etc.
No.
It's outrageous, really. No, it shouldn't be allowed to happen. Like, if you're going to do something like that, if the City group are going to do something like that, then there has to be stuff in place where these players have to play for their parent club at some point, surely.
It's against the interest of, like, competition, I think.
Yeah.
It ruins the kind of sporting integrity. And, I mean, if you're, like, a Troyes fan, you come from a long generations of Troyes fans in your family, you know. Seeing your club being bought out and used effectively as, like, a shell corporation so another club can seat their ends and make their cooked books look a little raw.
Just sucks the romanticism out of football completely if you're a Troyes fan. And if you're a neutral as well, really, like, it's not nice to hear about. And yeah, I guess it's just going to be one of those things. They're probably going to get relegated. City will get a slap on the wrist, and then they'll be playing in the Champions League next year and probably get away with their other charges and then win a few more Premier Leagues. So
probably play against Girona as well, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
Have you got anything more cheery?
Yeah, I have actually. This is brilliant. Marcelo Bielsa, he's a genius, right? Disciples within the game, such as Pep Guardiola, Pochettino, Simeone, really forward thinking, like tactically streets ahead of his time. And he's got that obsessive nature that the majority of top coaches are equipped with, like, you know, Pep, like, they live and breathe the game at every waking second. But he is a bit rogue at the same time. Like, he doesn't take, you know, the most trodden paths in football. And this week he's done something which is a little unprecedented. He's called up an amateur footballer to the Uruguayan national team. A team, obviously, he's now coaching and that he will be leading into battle at the Copa America this summer. So TNT Argentina are reporting that Bielsa will call up Walter Dominguez, who has scored 57 goals in 39 games for amateur side Juventud de Soriano. So, like, he's handy. He's obviously a goal scorer, but he plays for an amateur club. So this is to face Costa Rica in their next friendly on May the 31st, which we will most definitely be covering on the subsequent podcast, because I'm very, very intrigued. Why has he done this? It's not like a stunt to gain, I don't know, recognition or whatever for the Uruguay national team. It is unprecedented. It is pretty odd. And Bielsa is basically, he's enabled to bring players in from the Uruguayan clubs such as Nacional, Peñarol, Liverpool, Racing and Danubia, as they have commitments in the Copa Libertadores and the Sudamericana in that week. So naturally, obviously, the next step is to turn to a 24-year-old goal scorer, mixing it in the lower divisions in Uruguay. And I would love nothing more than for him to show some, like, really good link-up play with Nunes, Valverde and co. and, like, banging a hat-trick or something. It just feels like something that would happen under Bielsa. So I'm praying that's what we see in a few weeks' time.
That'd be fantastic. But imagine being the, you know, obviously got Nunes and Suarez knocking about still.
Yeah.
Imagine being the third choice striker at Uruguay, and then this guy gets on the pitch before you.
You'd be fuming. But equally, imagine how Walter's feeling at the minute. I bet he's on top of the world. Like, probably thought it was a prank.
God. Yeah.
Definitely thought it was a prank.
it's one of those, you know, I couldn't believe it when they told me, but it's actually true. You know, like the cliche, yeah. I couldn't, I thought somebody was having a joke with pulling my leg when they phoned me up. But for this, I get it. It's probably the equivalent of like Jamie Vardy joining the England team when he was playing for Stocksbridge Park Steels, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Or, more recently, like Macaulay Langstaff when he was smashing goals in the National League. Probably similar.
Good stuff.
Yeah, wild.
Good stuff. So, Abdel Fatawu, 20-year-old winger, currently at Leicester City, as you know, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
He's on loan from Sporting in Portugal. Having a pretty good season, scored a hat-trick recently against Southampton, didn't he?
Yeah.
Leicester is set to trigger the permanent transfer clause now that Premier League promotion has been secured.
Mm-hmm.
But Fatawu, he joined Sporting straight from Ghana, a club called Steadfast a few years back, who apparently let him leave for a small fee, but with a pretty big release clause. Pretty big sell-on clause. So 50% sell-on clause. Now, bear in mind that the highest fee Steadfast have ever received from a transfer is €25,000. The highest fee that any Ghanaian side has received is apparently €1.8 million. From this deal, Steadfast looks set to receive almost €8 million just from this deal.
Wow.
Imagine the things that money could do for football development in the region, in the country, in the surrounding area. It's an incredible amount of money.
That's going to be massive.
It goes a long way. It's going to go a really long way. So, yeah, good
for
them.
They must have really trusted in him being like a short-term success if they're willing to let him to go for free. Really clever.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's been a few players who've been signed from Africa to European clubs.
Mm-hmm.
The clubs maybe didn't take up those sell-on clauses. They just let the players go because it was in their best interest of their careers.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been quite smart with it, haven't they? And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it's the first one of this scale, but it probably won't be the last.
Yeah, no, I like that. And he's decent as well. He's quite handy out on the wing. I'm intrigued to see how he's going to do it in the Premier League. He's quite slight. He's quite small, but no, he is decent. So that should be interesting. Anyway, next, Nathan Oualabi was hired by Bromley earlier this year. On the 9th of February, this was posted on Bromley's website. So Bromley Football Club can confirm that 23-year-old Nathan Oualabi has been appointed support performance tactician as part of our partnership with Xbox and Football Manager. The role will involve shadowing and learning from all of our coaching staff, including manager Andy Woodman, to understand the ins and outs of the tactical decision making that goes into preparing a football team for success, etc., etc. And a few months later, I'm not sure how much of the success we can attribute to Nathan, but he has played his part in Bromley entering the Football League for the first time in their 132-year history after beating Solihull Moors on penalties. And Andy Woodman said before the playoff final that we want to keep progressing as best we can, and we are excited to see what fresh ideas he can bring to the club. So, yeah, Dan, I think there's still hope for us. I know we've both made a name for ourselves in the Football Manager world. I'm obviously a Bath City legend after taking the club to the Champions League. So if there's any managers in the EFL keen to take a punt on me, just leave us a message on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and I'll be at the training ground the next day. Ideally, I would like a club located down south, but I could also get on board with a nice cushy number in Manchester or something similar. So if the pay is right and I'm well compensated, then that could be something.
You commute that, yeah. Was this always your plan? Because I know you're somebody who looks a few weeks ahead with your betting.
Mm.
Were you looking at Bromley's fixtures? And is that why you wanted to bring up the Football Manager stuff last week? Just sort of planting the seed?
4D chess, Dan.
Yeah. I just wonder what he's going to do if he can't download tactics from the Steam Workshop. You know, is he going to...
Yeah. Yeah, he's screwed.
Yeah.
If he's not getting signal on the bus up to to crew or something.
He's got an update,
He's done for, yeah.
Googling Wonder Kids, yeah. Good luck to him. So, up in the Premier League on Monday night, Manchester United were spanked by Crystal Palace 4-0.
Spanked.
Now, they were thoroughly demolished. Yeah, not a good day for Manchester United. So I was looking back, and I remember back in December, our model Betsy made a pretty bold prediction that Manchester United were on course and would have their worst ever Premier League season. Mm-hmm. The prediction was that they'd finish ninth with 56.5 points.
Okay.
So at the moment, Sam, they're on course for their worst ever season, and they're currently ninth in the table on 54 points. So fixtures to come against Arsenal, Newcastle away, and Brighton. 3 points from those three looks pretty looks much about, on the money.
Looks about right.
Yeah.
Looks Bet's about right. It.
Yeah. So in the Premier League, sorry, in all competitions, they've conceded 81 goals this season, Manchester United. The most they've conceded in the season since 1976-77. They've lost 13 matches in the Premier League, their most in the Premier League era. I think the most damning statistic of all is that they've got negative goal difference in May. Manchester United.
Listen, that is an absolute disgrace for that football club. It's not good enough. If you look at the starting 11 last night, Johnny Evans and Casemiro starting centre half, like obviously they're struggling with injuries and stuff, but still it's really not good enough.
Yeah, one of that centre back pairing has looked past it this season, and it's not Johnny Evans, I'll tell you.
No, it's Jamie Redknapp's biggest fan.
Yeah.
Right, next. News coming out of the Championship today, Liam Rossini has been sacked by Hull City as manager. In April, about 3 weeks ago, he was on a three-man shortlist with Kieran McKenna of Ipswich and Daniel Farke of Leeds for the Championship Manager of the Season. Kieran McKenna won that. He got Ipswich up, and Liam Rossini got a sack. He took charge of Hull City when they were 18th last season, fourth from bottom, with 19 points from 18 games. And a season and a bit later, things looking much, much brighter at Hull all around the club. Rossini is to thank for a lot of that. They're seventh in the Championship. Just missed out narrowly on playoff football by 3 points. The argument for the sacking, I assume, unless something's gone on behind the scenes that we're not aware of at the minute, will be that Hull have spent a lot of money and they have a very good squad, and that they should be making the playoffs, and Rossini is underachieved. But this has been a mightily strong Championship campaign with some very good teams playing at a lofty level. And what I can never get my head around with things like this in these kind of situations is that if Hull, who finished 3 points off Norwich in sixth, if the final day had panned out a little differently, let's say, I think it was West Brom lost and Hull beat Argyle, and Hull end up sixth and not seventh, Liam Rossini is still in a job. Like, it's fine margins. Like, I get it. It's a results-based and objective-based business. But you can't tell me that 3-point gap between Norwich right now means that Rossini now isn't the man to move this club forward. But if results have gone different on the final day, he is the man to lead the club forward. Like, I don't get that. And I know he's not met his objective. That was probably handed to him by the owner. But I can't really subscribe to that personally. And like, Rossini as a coach, like, I really like him. He's young, he's ambitious, he's still evolving. He's not the finished product. Comes across really well with the media. Looks like a really good man manager and tactically pretty shrewd as well. And he felt like a great fit for Hull. Felt like someone who's building something at that football club to get them in a position to really have a crack at promotion. And for me, it's just, there are owners like the Hull City owner. He's got a bit of money. He's ambitious, and so he should be. But I think he's in a bit too much of a rush. I think there are a fair few like that. And maybe we saw that with Birmingham City earlier in the season, and you know, look where they've ended up. They're in League One now. I think he's got rid of him for maybe. Look, I have no idea. I'm just guessing, but I think he probably wants someone a bit sexier than Liam Rossini. Maybe someone from Turkey. Maybe is where he's from. And I'm telling you, it's probably not going to work out. I could be wrong. Liam Rossini, for me, like, obviously I'm biased, but I think he'd be a match made in heaven for Plymouth Argyle. So Simon Hallett, if you're listening, yeah, maybe take a punt. Well, it wouldn't really be taking a punt. I think it'd be a bit of a coup, to be honest, if Argyle went for someone like that. So yeah, I was really shocked at that, and I thought I'd add it onto the podcast as a last minute addition because I just couldn't believe it. So
no, surprised me as well. And I don't think it's too bold a claim for you to make, Sam. Fast forward 12 months, I feel like Liam Rossini will probably be higher up in the table than Hull City.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Wouldn't be at all surprised. So last one for the first half, shirts, right? So as fans, as purists are still reeling from the news that Germany, the German national football team, are going to be swapping Adidas for Nike.
Yeah.
We could be handed an even worse blow with Brazil, the land of Joga Benito, of R9, with his in his Nike shirt, that they could be leaving Nike.
No.
Apparently.
For Adidas?
Or I think it was Puma as well. We're in on it. But apparently both, it was definitely Nike and I think one other were offering, it was definitely Adidas and one other were offering five times what Nike are currently paying the Brazil national team to sponsor their shirts.
Nah, that doesn't sit well with me. I don't like that.
No. And if it's just a case of swapping Germany and Brazil around with their shirts, but it's just triple stripes on a Brazil shirt. What colour would they even be?
Yeah, no, I don't like that. If you're a football fan of a certain generation, yeah, like you said, all of those Joga Benito adverts and stuff and R9 with his daft haircut in his Nike Brazil strip, it's just kind of like imprinted on my brain.
Yeah.
Especially from, you know, the big World Cup tournaments of yesteryear. So no, I really don't like the sound of that.
It's a scary new world, Sam.
It's a disgrace.
Let's take a look at Sam's bets for this week. But before we do that, let's go back to last weekend. And Sam, three bets settled. Two took place this weekend. One was an outright. Do you want to talk about the outright one first? It was, melancholy for you, back in your hometown club to get relegated from the championship, but
it's poor by me, to be honest. A few of my mates listen to the podcast and I've had a bit of stick for it. So not only have I lost a bet, but I've also kind of annoyed a large section of my friends. So yeah, not my proudest moment, but Plymouth Argyle avoided relegation on the final day of the championship. That was our pick at 4.50. At the time under Ian Foster, I think it was a really good position to get into. But like with most relegation picks, I've always said it, betting on a team to get relegated is probably the hardest anti-post position you can take, because it's different to betting on a team getting in top half or top six, because if you've got a club which you think is really likely going to be down there, the likelihood of a manager change or, you know, things changing in the club for the better, the likelihood of that is ramped right up. Whereas if you're betting on a top six finish, it means that you think the team's going to do quite well. So the likelihood of maybe, you know, things changing is not there. And over the course of the season, you'd think, well, you'd hope your pick naturally gets close to that objective, where it's a bit different with relegation. So that's what we saw. Ian Foster sacked, and that kind of put our bet in the mud a little bit. But still, on final day, it was still all to play for. And I think we're a little bit unlucky with that. But look, I'm thrilled I lost that bet, to be honest. So,
sad mind, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's exactly it.
I mean, I do sort of agree with the logic. I think for relegation outright betting, I generally don't go anywhere near them unless about five odds, six odds or higher. I won't go for any of the, you know, three or four or five favourites. I mean, last year I had Leicester City from the Premier League, which still sits up there with one of my best ever bets.
Nice.
So, but yeah, I wouldn't have taken them if they were a lot shorter. You just got to stay clear of the favourites, I think, for that.
I agree. And one of my big bets, anti-post bets this season, was Sheffield Wednesday. And that looked nailed on what was going on there. And it's just Isco Munoz. I didn't think he'd be a good fit for that club. And he wasn't. He was awful. And then they brought Danny Rowland and turned into, you know, prime Brazil in blue and white. So, that's what happens. the bets last week, on last week's podcast, we had Nottingham Forest to win and both teams to score versus Sheffield United at 2-1, 3.00 for a half a stake, half unit stake, and Nottingham Forest won 3-1. Really comfortable in the end. In the first half, it looked as if the game could go either way. Sheffield United had their chances too, but in the end, with obviously a lot more on the line for Forest, they ended up getting the job done at a good price for us, which was good. And on Monday, I think it was Monday, with a bank night. Holiday. Yeah, my days are all screwed up here. But yeah, on Monday, we had 1.5 unit stake on Doncaster, 0.0 Asian handicap versus Crewe at 1.83, and they won 2-0. That was fairly comfortable. Again, though, in the opening stages, Crewe kind of flexed their muscles and they looked pretty handy and it looked like they were going to go in front, but then Doncaster got the lead and in the second half they doubled it and that was really comfortable in the end, although there's a few scares at the start.
Did you regret not going for the going on the 1x2 with them for that one, because you were talking about a little bit for the Doncaster game?
Yeah, I was yeah, I do regret it, but I also, I don't know, I kind of like betting like that. Like, we've got the draw on side as well. It makes me feel at ease, you know?
Yeah, I get that.
If I went into that game, what needing a Doncaster win and, you know, cruise all over Doncaster in the opening stages, like, it's not really a position I want to be in. But yeah, of course, it'd have been better if I went for the 1x2, but still, I'll take that.
Yeah, definitely. That takes Sam's season profits to plus 3.335 units. As always, it's one unit staked unless otherwise stated. I mean, it was a bit different last week, wasn't it? You still had two stakes across the two bets, but it was just a half on the Forest game and 1.5 on the Doncaster game.
I'm putting you on the spot, but do you have like an ROI for that? Do you have the data in front of you or no?
I don't.
Doesn't really matter. I'm just curious.
For next week.
All right, cool.
I get that. I'll crunch some sums for you for next week.
Thanks.
So, Sam, talk us through your tips this week. We're starting with the Premier League leading club, Arsenal, away at Manchester United.
Yes, we are. So the bet is for Arsenal to win and under 3.5, Arsenal goes at 1.95 on Bet365 now. Excuse me. This comes less than 24 hours after Crystal Palace spanked United 4-0, right? So let's probably start with the elephant in the room. Like, I know exactly what most people will be thinking here in that selection. Arsenal are free scoring and United, yeah, they've just been pumped. So why on earth would you back unders on one of the most dangerous sides in the league at the minute? Well, United actually haven't conceded four or more goals at Old Trafford this season, for a start. They've never conceded four goals at home under Erik ten Hag. And it's not exactly a big achievement, is it, to be honest? But it's worth noting, I think, for this selection. In terms of head-to-heads, Manchester United have lost just one of their last 16 Premier League home games against Arsenal. That was 1-0 in November 2020, and that was from an Aubameyang penalty. So about 4 years ago. The landscape is a little different now, granted, but this isn't a setting that Arsenal have a lot of joy in. Now, the last time a team scored four or more goals in this fixture was the 8-2 United win in 2011. Sorry to bring that up, Dan. Before that, United won 4-2 in an away game in 2005. Now, I'm not a big head-to-head guy, but, you know, I like to set the scene with these kind of things. I think it's worth knowing. And if you subscribe to Arsenal turning up here and putting the home side to the sword, then you have to get a little creative with getting them on side, because they're 1.40 for the win. The Asian handicap line is set at 1.5, which will put a lot of people off, I think. And that's why we're pairing an Arsenal win and under 3.5 Arsenal goals.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a pretty dire season for Manchester United. As we said in the first half, 4-0 at Crystal Palace on Monday, I think was a new low, which is probably saying something considering how many lows they've had in this campaign. But I mean, what do you expect from them when they play Arsenal on the weekend? They could have a few players back, by the way, looking at the early injury news, they could have about half a team back for the match.
Yeah, I saw that. They'll be hoping they've got a centre-half back, definitely. I think the 4-0 loss to Palace is probably the best scoreline we could have hoped for on the weekend, or on Monday, sorry, in terms of the under selection here. And that's pretty much why I've picked it. Erik ten Hag and his playing staff would have received a lot of stick after yesterday's showing. They've been in these situations before. It seems like every other week this is happening. But ten Hag is still there. They managed to squirm their way out of these kind of predicaments. And I don't think they'll have enough to outbox Arsenal. I don't think they'll outscore Arsenal. But I do think it's likely that they'll sit in, let Arsenal have the ball and attempt to pick them off. If you think back to Manchester City versus United, where they took the lead through that Marcus Rashford wonder strike, that game is probably the blueprint here, I think, for Ten Hag. I think sit in, take whatever chances come your way and try and get something out of the game in that fashion. It's not the United way, and I bet Sir Alex would probably wince at the thought of allowing Arsenal to come and play at Old Trafford, but that best describes the tools that Ten Hag has to work with at the minute, especially with the current injury crisis. Mentioned it earlier, Casemiro and Johnny Evans in central defence on Monday against Palace, that's not good enough. Like, I'm honestly not sure if that would make the grade in the Championship playoffs this weekend. And in the end, yeah, I think Arsenal should be too strong, and I think they'll capitalise on the possession handed to them and the mismatch United back line. Obviously, they've got a lot more to play for than United. They've got a lot on the line. They could be set to win a Premier League title. So you would imagine, you know, they really, really pile the pressure on United. And so, yeah, for Arsenal to win but not score four or more goals, for Arsenal to win but not absolutely batter United, I think I like that at 1.95. And this Gunners side is 10 clean sheets away from home this season. And I wouldn't be overly surprised if we see like a professional 1-0, 2-0 victory whilst keeping United at bay at the other end. But yeah, with this bet, I'd also gladly take an end-to-end 3-2 in Arsenal favour, because that, you know, suits this narrative as well. So yeah, 1.95 Arsenal to win and under 3.5 Arsenal goals.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. It is interesting you brought up United's potential game plan for it, kind of sitting back, letting Arsenal have the ball, playing transitions, which would obviously suit the team. But going back to the other game at the Emirates back in September, I think it was, that's pretty much what Arsenal tried to do to United. I remember that was a game Andre Onana had about 50-odd passes, and United dominated possession but couldn't really get out their own half. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if neither team wants the ball, really, a bit of hot potato with them chucking it back and forth.
I know what you're saying, because like Mikel Arteta would love United to get on the ball and really take the game to Arsenal, because they would pick them off. But you've got to think that Ten Hag will kind of know what will happen if they do that. So yeah, it'd be interesting. Maybe the ball will just stay on the centre spot and they'll just run around aimlessly in each half.
Great 90 minutes. So the data is heavily in Arsenal's favour. Only the bottom three in West Ham have more expected goals against than Manchester United this season. Now, Arsenal have the highest NPXG, non-penalty expected goal difference, for those who are unaware, since the start of the season. They've conceded just 8 goals in 16 matches since 2024. But as you say, as you said earlier, United just have a habit of getting something from this fixture. Mm. 1-11, drawn 4 of the last 16 meetings at Old Trafford with Arsenal. So the form and season data only seem to point one way. So how much weight do you give to the historical record when you're making bets like this?
Yeah, I really don't like head-to-heads in terms of using it as research and betting. It's not really something that I use. However, in certain fixtures, historically, if one team really struggles against the other, I think maybe it should come into your thinking a little bit. I know that the thing is, like, the lay of the land this season and last season is completely different to how it was under, you know, Sir Alex versus Wenger. So can you really compare the two? No, not really, especially in betting. But yeah, there is something there. Maybe you should have a little think about it, but I don't think it should kind of sway your thinking one way or the other.
Yeah. I get that. I do. For some fixtures, I think you are right. You should bring it up. I mean, you know, City away at Spurs, like those kind of matchups, bogey teams. I do have a look, but quite rarely. It doesn't really come to my mind.
Derbies too. I think that's an anomaly. That's you know, like Everton, Liverpool. The old saying of form goes out the window, you know, it's probably true in that fixture, and it is for a fair few. So,
yeah. We'll see. So Sam's first bet, that is Arsenal to win and under 3.5 Arsenal goals at 1.95 when they play Manchester United on Sunday. Your second pick for the week is in the Championship playoffs, Sam.
Yes, playoff football. So playoff football is a different beast, as many of you will know, especially in the EFL. Some will probably hear this selection and fancy running a mile on paper. It's Norwich plus 0.25 Asian handicap at 2.01 versus Leeds United. Leeds United are the better team. They have the better manager in Daniel Farker. Leeds are 2.1 favourites to win this first leg at Carrow Road and 2.62 second favourites behind Southampton to get promoted to the Premier League. They're playing West Brom in the other playoff semi. However, if I rocked up at Fark's office door this evening with some kind of golden envelope that guaranteed a draw at Carrow Road, I am certain he would take it and run back to Elland Road in front of a buoyant, deafening home setting where they can get the job done. So you think, like, if they were drawing in the final stages in the first leg, Leeds will be a touch more pragmatic than usual. That's just how, you know, first legs work. It's the same in the Champions League. And I don't want it to come across like I'm trying to teach people how to suck eggs, because this is common knowledge. But in terms of the betting markets, like a home side with a plus 0.25 goal advantage in a playoff first leg, it's an attractive one, because you know they are going to try and work themselves into a position where they take an advantage away to the second leg of the tie. So yeah, it's an attractive handicap on the face of it. And then when you start drilling down into recent form and Norwich at Carrow Road in the second half of the season, like, it gets even more intriguing for me. Before the final day defeat to Birmingham, before the final day defeat against Birmingham for Norwich, a side scrapping for survival and with nothing really on the line for Norwich. Norwich had only lost one game in nine, which was away against Leicester before the final day of the season. So Norwich haven't lost at Carrow Road since the 5th of November. And that was the final defeat in a stretch where they lost 8-11, with calls for Wagner's head intensifying by the weekend. And somehow he navigated the calls for the sack, and I was sure he would go at one point. He was favourite too. This handicap line would have returned profits in 15 of their previous 15 home matches. That includes matches against Coventry, Southampton, West Brom and Ipswich. And we know how well those latter three are doing in the league this season. Since the 5th of November, Norwich are unbeaten at home, scoring 31 goals and conceding 10 goals in 15 matches. So Leeds are the better team. Their squad is stacked with quality, but they've hit a poor stretch at the worst possible time. They've won just once in their last six matches, which was a 4-3 away win in Middlesbrough. And they were lucky to win that. I think Middlesbrough got a goal late on, which looked onside and it was given off. So on another day, that ends 4-4 and Leeds haven't won in six games. Leeds' last away outing against QPR ended miserably too, losing 4-0 and all but handing Ipswich a free run at automatic promotion. On paper, I think most people would fancy Leeds, but, you know, if you really look at it and with the draw advantage, half profits in the event of a draw, I think you've probably got to look at Norwich in this opening first leg.
I was one of those people who raised an eyebrow when you first sent me over this bet. I mean, I remember the previous match at Carrow Road earlier in the season, wasn't it? Norwich went 2-0 up. Leeds fought back to win it 3-2. Mm-hmm. Leeds then completed a domestic double over them. Leeds have actually, going back to the head-to-head conversation, Leeds have actually won 7 of their last 10 matches against Norwich.
Okay. It's not ideal, is it?
It's not ideal, but that, as I said, that includes both matches this season. So, but of course, it is a different competition now in the playoffs. As you said, it's a lot closer to Champions League late stage knockout competition. How much value do you put on regular season league matches when betting on a first leg playoff like this?
That's a good question. I think as a group of players, it's something that will definitely be in the back of your head, knowing that you're coming up against a team that's already, you know, done a job on you twice this season. It's hard to say how that's going to affect this Norwich side. Is that going to be, you know, will that light the fire under them and make them want to really go out and prove a point against a Leeds United team, which is now not in the best of form? Or will that be in the back of the head thinking, you know what, this Leeds team, they're quite decent, and they naturally sit back and maybe pay a bit too much respect to Leeds? It's hard to say how that will go. So yeah, it's not ideal. But I think when you're looking at playoff football and you're approaching it from a betting point of view, for me, it's all about form. It's not all about form, but I think that's a really key pivotal factor. And then after that, you obviously look at the setups between the two teams and who you think's gonna get the better of the who you think it's gonna get the better of the other team. Is team A, you know, are they gonna be able to outbox team B? But for me, yeah, like I said, it's very much form, momentum, and how strong a team is coming into the playoffs. And if you look at, I've got the injury lists up here. Crescencio Somerville was on the end of a pretty bad tackle against Southampton. He's Leeds' key player. So there are concerns around his fitness, although the signs are fairly positive that he'll be back for this fixture, but keep an eye on that. Dan James is out. Bamford is likely absent, but we're not too sure. Dan James being out is a big miss. But for Norwich, Ashley Barnes is sidelined, which will also be a big miss. But Jonathan Rowe is fit. So he's featured off the bench in the last four consecutive games. And I've got a feeling he'll be unleashed on the playoffs in some capacity. And that will be a huge boost for Norwich. I don't know if you can remember, Dan, early stage of the season, he was absolutely flying. He was scoring every week.
Yeah,
he's not been available for them in the back end of the season. He's been out injured. So if Norwich, you know, they're happy playing at home, if they've got John Rowe back as well in front of a home fan base in you know, kind of a raucous voice, then I think the plus 0.25 Asian handicap is something to look at. I like that much more than I like the minus 0.25 Leeds line at a similar price. So yeah, that's one that stood out for me.
Yeah, going back to what you said last week, Sam, when looking at the Asian handicaps, how happy would you be to take the opposing line? And yeah, I think it's definitely one of those, isn't it? Going back to Somerville's injury, he scored a brace in that 3-2 win for Leeds at Carrow Road in the previous match. And yeah, it does feel like an absolute lifetime ago that David Wagner's time at Norwich looked to be coming to an end after that really poor run of form, doesn't it? It feels like a different season.
Yeah, it's miraculous, the change around, because I am certain he was maybe a game away from... He was living on borrowed time. So, he was a game or so away from the chop. And Somerville, I think he's the best player in the Championship this season. So if Leeds go into the playoffs, yeah, I know that's a big shout, but I think he is. If Leeds go into the playoffs in, you know, not the best form and without Somerville and Dan James, I'm not sure if they're going to go up, if that happens. So we'll see.
We'll see. I think it's one win in six for Leeds to end out the season. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah, Norwich are a completely different side at Carrow Road. They took 2.13 points per game in their home matches in the regular season. 2.13 compared to just 1.04 away from home. Now, that is the biggest difference between home and away points per games of any team in the Championship.
I see. Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that is down to their incredible turnaround in the second half of the season. Those was about 8 or 9 straight wins they had at home, didn't they, to close since January. So yeah, I mean, it looks pretty good. I was not on board with this whatsoever. If I would be betting on this match, I'd probably be going under on goals. But yeah, that plus 0.25 does a lot of that as well, because I can't see Leeds coming in and stealing a 2 or 3 goal win into the second half. Second leg at this time.
We only need a draw as well, and you know, we'll gladly exit with half profits.
Definitely. So you go in full unit stake for both of these?
Yeah, full unit stake.
1 unit in each. So just to recap Sam's bet of the week, we've got Arsenal to beat Manchester United and under 4 goals for Arsenal in the match. Works out as under 3.5 goals for Arsenal. That comes in at 1.95 on Bet365. And in the Championship playoffs, Sam has gone for Norwich plus 0.25 in the Asian handicap market. At home to Leeds, 2.01. Singles, 1 unit on each. Not even.
Yes, please. Yeah, singles.
As ever, if you're going to be using any of Sam's bets or any of the bets from this show, then please gamble responsibly, only betting what you can afford to lose. If you have any spare time, then please leave us a review on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, because we are a fairly new show and it does help so much with visibility. Let's leave it there. Thank you very much to Sam Ingram.
Thank you very much.
And thank you from me. We'll be back next week.